As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This is Issues 2021. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. Welcome to Issues 2021.
Good morning.
Been a couple of several months since we chatted. It's been a tough year for just about everybody. How has the pandemic impacted your operation, with in generally speaking?
Well, it's tough to be general about it because there's so many specific ways that it has. But so we'll start with last spring. Of course, we were had months worth of jury trials set. And the Kansas legislature, recognizing that it was likely that we were going to be having to take a break of some length, gave the Supreme Court the power to control our dockets and some of the filing deadlines, because the court system runs on deadlines, speedy trial, statute of limitations, different filing deadlines, that sort of thing. And if courts were going to be closed for even a small period of time, that would throw all of that off. So a piece of legislation was passed that quickly gave the Supreme Court the power to control that. It was later tied to the governor's power to grant emergency orders. And so off we went, thinking, well, it's March 18th of 2020. My guess is we'll be back in business by, Memorial Day? Thinking very naively. That was how things would go. Obviously, as things went longer and longer, our ability to do trials has been significantly impacted over the last year. We've continued to do a lot of work. The judges, the court system, the judiciary here in Wichita just passed around some of the last year's statistics. And we still managed to have north of 15,000 hearings in 2020, despite the fact that we could only do so at about one or two an hour, as opposed to in the past we could do five or six or 10, depending on the type of hearing, per hour. So and after each hearing we're supposed to clean the courtroom, and it's very cumbersome to move forward. But despite all of that, we've got a lot of work done. Nearly 2,000 cases have been resolved. Plea negotiations, that sort of thing. And so we've continued to work and get a lot done. The one thing that cannot be done by Zoom or WebEx or in any other, platform is a jury trial. There's a confrontation clause in the Constitution of the United States and in Kansas. In fact, Kansas says face-to-face. So you literally have to be in a courtroom with your witness on the witness stand with 12 jurors in the box next to you. And that's how jury trials have to go. And there's no way to do that legally, constitutionally, by Zoom. And so that's been the one hiccup, the one real headache, is trying to get jury trials done in a time of pandemic. I'd say that the county commission and worked with the judges and used federal COVID money to outfit two of our courtrooms last September. I think Judge Gehring, our chief administrative judge, affectionately calls them the hockey rinks. They look like hockey rinks because they are full of plexiglass. to keep everybody separated from one another, but still able to see what's going on. And so we have, I think I heard $40,000 worth of plexiglass in these courtrooms, something like that, which has allowed us to still do jury trials, but not nearly at the pace we would have, you know, in the past. I think in January, February, first part of March last year, we did 26 jury trials, something like that. And then the balance of the entire year, we did another six, something like that. So it's, you know, it has significantly slowed down our ability to do jury trials. But like I said, in every other respect, we're still plugging along, trying to keep the office from having to shut down. So we have people on, you know, kind of a rotating basis. You work Monday, you work Tuesdays to work at home, other, you know, so that we don't have to shut down the entire operation for 2 weeks, which would have been devastating. So it's been a challenge, but at the same time, we've been able, I've been very pleased with the amount of work we've been able to do. And we'll just keep going on and on here, but we've come up with some creative things too. Like for instance, last summer and fall, we called the traffic docket out on the courthouse steps, literally out in front of the courthouse in tents, so that people could social distance outside and not be inside. And that's how we called, you know, traffic docket for, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 months. Wasn't as much fun in July and August when it was, you know, 95 degrees, but we're still able to get things done rather than just shutting things down. So that's the long answer to your short question, but it's been a challenge, but we've been trying to come up with workarounds and still get stuff done.
Well, thank goodness the legislature moved quickly, at least to help you with those deadlines.
Well, yeah, there was the backstory there is I had gone to a state basketball tournament. My daughter plays in the band of one of the high schools here, and I went over to watch, and they got to play their first round last March, and then the buzz around the auditorium of the stadium was they're shutting down, no more games. And on the way home, I heard the Big 12 tournament basketball was shut down. I thought, wow, this is getting serious. And so we reached out to some friends in the legislature and said, folks, before you shut down here, we got an issue. And they recognized the issue, understood the gravity of it, and quickly moved. That was a Thursday, and I think by the following Wednesday we had the bill passed. So it was very beneficial. Otherwise, we'd have really been in dire straits.
What impact has that had on the population of the jail?
So, you know, like I said, we worked out over the last, let's just say calendar 2020, we were able to work out somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think, just north of 1,900, so I think that's the number, cases. Now, obviously, January, February, and early March, things were just clipping along as normal, so some of that's attributed to that period of time. but we can still work cases out. People still take plea negotiations, and we still, you know, move forward. But the ones that are the more serious cases where people are looking at, you know, decades in prison or they have been in trouble habitually. I was on probation for a burglary. I picked up another burglary and flee and elude, and I've got a meth position when they caught me. So now I've got three cases, and the judge has set even a modest bond in all three of them. They stack up. I can't, you know, I'm not going anywhere because the judge thinks I'm kind of a menace right now. So what do you do with that guy? Well, if he's not willing to plead to all three cases and we can't work out a package deal, he's just waiting for his trial. And so between those and the murder cases and the rape cases, you know, the very serious ones, things have stacked up. And so our jail is at, you know, capacity right now. We have managed to keep it from, you know, being in a crisis stage where where Jeff Easter's going to have to, I don't know, have tent cities or anything like crazy like that. We've not been at that sort of breaking point, but it's been difficult. Yeah, it's added. I think Jeff told me last week we had 115 people sitting in custody right now, awaiting trial on some degree of homicide, whether it's first degree murder or all the way down to, you know, vehicular homicide. So, you know, in a normal year, that number should be 45 to 50 at any given time. So, you know, that's certainly not all 1,400 people sitting over there, but it adds up. So
you've talked a little bit about how your staff has worked, but talk about a little bit how has your staff been hard hit by COVID? In other words, have they gotten sick?
Yeah, we've had numbers, sure, but it's not been, I don't know off the top of my head, you know exactly how many, but it's never been 50 at once. I mean, we have 100 and Well, I have 55 lawyers, 70 support staff. At any given time, we'll have, you know, more part-timers and interns and whatnot. So, you know, having somewhere in the neighborhood of 120 to 135 people work here. We have never had more than a handful at a time, you know, have to take off. And I should also clarify that just like everybody else, there's been people who've had to quarantine because their kid came home and was exposed. They never were sick, but, you know, sure, to keep it safe, they had to stay at home. But we've managed to do it without having massive, I'd say layoffs, but have massive unavailability of employees and attorneys. So, you know, five people will be out at a time. You know, maybe a bad week, we get six or ten. But we managed to keep it under control. But we, you know, if you walk in, you'll see everybody wearing masks, unless you're in your own office with the door shut. We wear masks in court, masks around the courthouse. Try to take, you know, we have not had, in like most offices in the past, people eat lunch together and, you know, sit around. There's been none of that. I'm just taking the normal precautions, trying to keep the doors open and the lights on. So,
have you lost anybody?
No.
That's good. Wow.
Yeah. We've had a few folks retire during this period of time, but nobody, yeah, nothing that dire. So that's been a.
How much can you work from home, or your people can work from home? Any at all? Or?
Yeah. It's, you know, the upside is the county has been fairly progressive in that regard for a number of years. So years ago, you'd get a token, an electronic token, which would give you a number, and then you'd have a minute. You could use it and then plug in from out. But it's gotten a little more updated than that even. And so, yeah, I can log in from home and have the functional equivalent of sitting at my desk here. Not to raise the specter of a political issue, but Tabitha Lehman, the election commissioner, there were some issues. My point is your listeners may remember that that was her argument, that she was able,
right,
because of the county's efforts, she could log in from home and do her work. Well, we have access to the same technology. And so, yeah, I can sit at home and work on my cases as if I'm sitting at my desk on my own desktop. Now, that works for, excuse me, for attorneys who are preparing cases, working on pleadings, that sort of thing. Obviously, there's no substitute for standing up in court and sitting at the desk in front of the judge. You have to be there physically for that. But for some modest hearings, I want to do a bond modification. I want to, you know, nothing that's earth-shattering. We've been able to do some of those by Zoom or WebEx, one of the platforms. The more difficult thing is, you know, for support staff who are working on files and filing documents and that sort of thing, that's a difficult task to do from home. Although we have several folks, it depends on the job, frankly, more than anything else. And there are several folks who have worked at home quite a bit, even support staff. So it depends on the job you do, depends on the task you're performing that given day. And to the extent that we can do it, if we can have someone work from home for 2 days a week, that's one less person here to be exposed or to expose others. And you know, managing that, our supervisors have been, you know, air traffic controllers trying to keep, you know, make sure that everybody's where they need to be and when they need to be there. But it has worked to our advantage mightily this year. Without the technology, I don't know how we could have gotten nearly as much done as we have.
Well, let's talk about vaccinations. Obviously, you're not old enough to get one, but
not quite.
Are your people getting any priority on that?
Well, oddly enough, yesterday we heard from the county that they're starting to expand it, I think. So it's, you know, like in the general population, they've gone from 70 to, I think, 65 currently.
Mm-hmm.
And then, pardon me, then they're moving to first responders. And somewhere in the next few days, we're some of our folks, if you work with the courts in court or you know, work around people who go up to court every day, they're starting to expand that to our folks so that we can get people vaccinated. So I would like to think here in the next, you know, week or two, we'll start to get our first round at least.
You're listening to Issues 2021 on the Entercom radio stations, and our guest is Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. What impact has the pandemic had on juvenile crime in the county? I'll bet you've seen something happen there.
You know, it's been tough pin down exactly. We've had nationally and locally both. We've had less property crime, nonviolent crime for some reason, which is great. Don't look a gift horse, but we have had a spike both in the adult side and the juvenile side, with some violent crime, with shootings primarily, gun crimes. It's no secret that last year Wichita hit our all-time record for the number of homicides. I think we had 59 in Sedgwick County, which is an ignominious threshold you want to cross. You know, this is nothing to be proud of, but at the same time, you look around the country, and we are hardly the only city that's been in that that's hit that mark. Mm-hmm. Dozens of cities around the country have hit all-time records for homicides and shootings. So there is, I'm sure some social scientist or criminologist at some point will look back and find the underlying reasons for all of this. But so, and that is not, the juvenile population has not been absolved from that as well. I mean, we've had more young people, involved in shootings and sadly involved in killings and being the victims of other youthful offenders who have shot them. So I think that's been the one trend. There's also, I'd say some more in terms of flee and elude cases, kids getting in the cars and, driving fast. Then when the cops pull them behind them, they take off. And there's been some of that sort of stuff. That's probably more anecdotal. But if there's one trend I've seen, it's the number of kids who are using guns to settle disputes. Even if no one's killed, just shell casings on the ground, people shooting at and intimidating one another. So,
has there been any impact on consumer issues such as scams and things like that from the pandemic?
Yeah, we're trying to stay in our lane in terms of not, so for instance, there's been any number of things going on scam-wise. Yeah, I think the scammers have been on, drinking their coffee during this pandemic and staying up all night, working overtime because they're, we have, so the most obvious is the labor unemployment scams. That's not really a consumer fraud thing. That's not a consumer who went out and was taken advantage of by a business or by somebody holding themselves out as a business. So it's a little different thing. That's more of a state employment law, or excuse me, employment labor department issue. But we do have people who are getting scammed, especially folks, some of the elderly at home. There was another rash this last, in the last few months of people. And what you find is they'll use business names that have been around long enough to give them an air of legitimacy. So, hi, I'm with the Publishers Clearinghouse. You have, congratulations, you have won. And they use the good name or the good reputation of a Publishers Clearinghouse or of a even a government agency. I'm with the IRS. I'm with the, unemployment division, their labor division.
Yeah.
And I need your bank account. I need your, whatever it may be. And, but there's been, I've heard the anecdotes add up to trends, but I've heard a number of situations, both locally and then even from colleagues and around the state, where older folks are getting calls. They're at home even more now than normal. There's lack of personal contact, so people may be more inclined to pick up the phone, even if they don't recognize the number, just if nothing else, out of boredom. And, hey, I'm with the, I see that you trade, that you have some stocks with Ameritrade, with whoever it may be, again using the good name of or good reputation of another business. And then there's been a breach, and we need to make sure that your account is safe, and is this your account number? No, you got it wrong, it's this. Let's clarify that. The next thing you know, they're down the path of losing their savings or their investments. So
what are you seeing in terms of domestic violence and sex crimes in the pandemic?
Yeah, that's another. With the shootings, that's another that's not only locally, regionally, but nationally a trend, that the domestic violence numbers are way, way up. Domestic violence unit, we have a unit of prosecutors who are devoted to that and sex crimes. They are really working overtime right now because the number of domestic violence crimes are way up. And I think some of the advocates, the Catholic Charities, Harper House, the different folks who work in that arena, Stepstone here in Sedgwick County to try to help victims of domestic violence, have been fairly vocal about trying to make sure that the resources that are available in a city of this size are made known to people so that people don't suffer in silence. But yeah, it's certainly been an issue.
Have you seen, been seeing any progress in treatment for those people who have mental and drug challenges? We talked before, they probably should be in an institution someplace other than the county jail or confronting police officers and sheriff's officers.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really the thing. When people talk about criminal justice reform issues, you know, if you listen to the sheriff, the chief, myself, you get no argument from us. There's no law enforcement official who says, we really think it's a good use of our resources to prosecute the mentally ill and the drug addicts. That's not really how the system should function. The problem, though, is if there's not an alternative, there's no place to put a guy who's, you know, out of his head and a threat to himself or others. And when they cross the line and go and commit a crime, they do pick up the knife and they wave it around at people and scare people, and, you know, they're dangerous. So the real issue is resources. I mean, when people say the criminal justice system is broken, you know, I kind of bristle at that and push back and say, I mean, this system's not autonomous. It doesn't have its own, you know, conscience that causes it to work on its own. It functions the way we design it to function. It functions the way where we put our resources. And if we don't have the resources or choose not to spend the resources to make treatment more available, then that's the way the system is going to function. And for those who would say, well, that's your job. It's just, the sheriff, the chief of police and the DA do not have, I don't have a drug treatment facility. I don't have clinicians who work for me. That is something that the state and the legislature will either fund or it won't. And right now the difficulty is that they're trying to come out of a time of COVID. People have been unemployed and businesses have been adversely affected and revenue is down. And so they're making these difficult decisions right now as we speak and in the legislature of Topeka, trying to decide where money will go, how they will spend the taxpayers' money. And this is the bottom line is people understand the need. The question is when, and I think it's more of a long-term approach. This isn't something that's going to be resolved in 6 months or a year. It's something that we have to have the long view of. And over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, we hope that the steps will be taken by the legislature to fully fund some of these resources so that we can start offloading people out of the criminal justice system into treatment and hopefully get them. The goal here is to make them stop. 95% of people who go to the penitentiary get out. Most people go for very short periods of time and housing people temporarily to keep them away from the rest of us. But when they get out, are they better? Are they going to continue to do this? And so it becomes a public safety issue here. It's not just trying to be nice. It's if I can't make you stop doing the things you are doing to victimize the rest of us by what I'm doing, maybe I need to try something different so that I can reduce crime and reduce the drain that individual causes the rest of it. It's $30,000 a year to put somebody into the penitentiary system. So every person who goes in, we're spending that kind of money. Would the money be better spent if we spent, $2,000 or $3,000 on them, trying to get them into treatment so they'd knock it off and maybe at least, maybe the idea of them being a fully functioning member of society is out with a high paying job. Okay, that may be a bit unrealistic, but could they just not commit crime? What's victory here? So we're working on it, but the long answer to the short question, or the short answer rather, is it's a matter of resources, and that's out of my hands. So all I can do is make the pitch to the legislature, and hopefully that it sticks over time, and we do make a substantive change.
I want to go another direction just a little bit. I have been in contact with several men my age, or even just a little younger, just recently, who have said they've talked about feelings of anxiety and depression during this pandemic. And I got to admit, there have been times when I have too. Is that something that you've experienced in any of you or any of your friends?
I think everybody's, facing there's a malaise that comes with this. And so are we ever going to get out of this? And I think the stress level, frankly, for the attorneys who are looking at their caseloads building is tangible. And for the cops who pick up these people and see the same faces over and over again, and the defense attorneys who are going, how do I keep contact with my clients and say, look, bud, I can't get you into court for I don't know when. And meanwhile, the normal practice is defense attorneys go over and see their clients in the jail in the pro-viz section. They call it professional visitation. And they can't, well, I guess you could do it, but do you really want to and go over there and be exposed yourself?
Right.
I mean, there's, you know, there's no portion of society, and the criminal justice system is a reflection of that. There's no portion of society that has not been impacted by this, and your ability to do your job. We're doing this interview by phone. I've done this with you half a dozen times over the years, maybe more. Never done it by phone. Well, I mean, nothing is immune from being affected by this. No profession. So,
And we're out of time. And we thank you for your time, as always. Our guest, Sedgwick County District Attorney Mark Bennett. That's all for this edition of Issues 2021. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.